Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Howard Zinn, the historian, educator, and activist most famous for his book, A People's History of the United States, would have turned 90 this August. Today's guest, award-winning historian Martin Duberman, has just published the first biography of Howard Zinn's life since his death on January 27th, 2010. Duberman writes that Zinn felt he'd been, quote, born with class consciousness. Noam Chomsky says the late Howard Zinn changed the consciousness of a generation. Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left, draws from Howard Zinn's private papers, school and military records, photographs, portions of the FBI files on him from 1949, and personal correspondence spanning over 50 years. He paints a portrait of a man who helped shape public discourse on the left over several decades, but who kept his private life fiercely guarded. Overall, he portrays a man with unrelenting optimism and an enduring critique of American imperialism. Joining us is Martin Duberman, a distinguished professor emeritus of history at the City University New York Graduate School, where he founded and for a decade directed the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies. The author of more than 20 books, Martin Duberman has won a Bancroft Prize and been a finalist for both the National Book Award and the Pulitzer Prize. Martin joins us today from his home in New York to talk about his most recent book, Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. Hi, Martin. Welcome to Your Call.
Hi, thanks very much.
Well, it's great to have you. I understand this is your first interview, so we're excited to have you on today. First off, why don't we talk about why you decided to write a biography of Howard Zinn?
I knew Howard somewhat. We were never close friends, but Howard's the person who got me involved and jailed during a demonstration against the war in Vietnam, for example. We only would meet casually and chat a bit at conventions and so forth, but I'd known him a long time and had admired him greatly.
What's also interesting, in your author's note, you write that you wanted to obviously write about his political life, but you also wanted to write about the interior, what was inside Howard. And you say, this is fascinating to me, that in the last years of his life, he destroyed nearly everything in his own archives that might have revealed his feelings and his relationships. His clear determination was to pull the veil over the personal side of his life, his marriage, his parenting, his friendships, his affairs. If there was to be any biography, Howard obviously wanted it to be about political, not private matters.
Yes, that is in fact true. I regretted his decision because I much prefer to present a rounded portrait, the inner life as well as the outer behavior. But that was Howard's decision. He was all his life a very private man. I was able, through interviewing close friends of his, and through reading manuscript collections of some of his friends in other libraries, to piece together part, at least, of his inner life, though not as much as I would have liked to have done.
And I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with Howard Zinn. A lot of people have obviously read A People's History of the United States. But for those who weren't, can you just give us kind of an overview of who Howard Zinn was and why you decided to dedicate over 300 pages to his life?
Ah, that's a tall order. well, to try to be brief, Howard was born of immigrant parents, grew up in poverty. That's what I meant when I said his class consciousness was formed at a very early age. But he didn't become really active in politics until somewhat later in life. He had some radical friends as a teenager who got him involved in a demonstration in Times Square, and in fact, he was knocked out by a policeman's club and woke up many hours later in a doorway. But he became truly active in a conscious, sustained way during the black struggle. Howard taught at Spelman College and began teaching there during the 1950s when the black movement was first surfacing. And Spelman College was then a very, a kind of a finishing school, a carbon copy for black young women of how white young women considered it a proper behavior. And Howard was much more, you know, anarchic and irregular and not at all pious about, you know, authority and manners. And he was a very important influence throughout the black struggle. He became, along with Ella Baker, one of the two senior advisors of SNCC, the radical young black organization, which did so much to pioneer the civil rights struggle. Howard was always a very modest man, and one historian has put it, you would never know from reading Howard's own writings the really central role that he played in the black struggle, because he portrayed himself as being almost entirely in the background,
right,
whereas he was in the foreground often.
And I really enjoyed reading about that. And also, you would never know by his writings, although he mentioned this a few times when he spoke, just about the poverty that he grew up in and was surrounded by. You write, and I think this is really important to touch on, when you kind of compare what Howard dealt with back then and compare what we're dealing with today, and there are so many similarities. But he grew up in a very impoverished family. He was able to go to college because of the GI Bill, which offered free tuition.
Right, right. Yes, I mean, he served during World War II, and as a result was the only member of his family to be able to go to college. And he went on from there to graduate school and got a doctorate in history. He was also, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but he was also very critical of American foreign policy, going back any number of years, back really to the end of the 19th century, in which we had intervened and interfered in the internal affairs of other governments, and often on the side of corporate or oligarchic interests. And Howard himself became involved very early and massively involved in the struggle against the war in Vietnam, which he felt was just the latest example of a sad and long history of American interference in the affairs of other countries.
Talk a little bit about how his service really shaped his views. You write that 2 weeks before the European war came to a close, which everyone knew was imminent, Howard's squadron was ordered to bomb Royan, a beautiful French resort town, one of Picasso's favorite spots, far from the front, where several thousand German soldiers were encamped awaiting surrender. You write, Howard and the other crew members were offhandedly told that they wouldn't be carrying their usual load of 2,500-pound demolition bombs, but instead 3,100-pound canisters of what were called jellied gasoline. And at that point, Howard realized long after the war, actually, that the canisters were in fact napalm.
Right, right. Yes, throughout the war, it surprised me somewhat, given his radical impulses as a teenager and also how radically active he became on many fronts subsequently. But during World War II itself, he was not political. Subsequently, as an older man, he was critical of our involvement in World War II, but in a rather ambiguous way. He wasn't sure that there was any other way to fight fascism except through the violence of warfare. But on the whole, he did not think that combativeness and aggression were instinctive to human beings. He felt that if anything was intrinsic to the cerebral cortex, it was affiliation, cooperation, and empathy. But as we've both said, Howard was a very optimistic man. I tend to share his views, so I'm favorably disposed toward the way he saw things.
That really did strike me, Martin, because even when Howard would get riled up or even depressed, he would often end his speech, or even if he was at maybe a SNCC gathering, for example, he would end whatever he said on an optimistic note. Where did that come from? Did you find out?
No. I don't think... I couldn't tell you about myself.
That's true.
Why essentially I'm an optimist, despite all the horrible things that I've seen around me and been through myself.
Can you share? Because I need some of these tips to try to stay optimistic.
No, I can't, unfortunately. There's something about temperament and how early it is formed. And probably has to do with familial relations. And those are very hard to probe, you know, many decades afterward, especially when there are so few records, as in Howard's case, of what his childhood experience was really like.
We're speaking with award-winning historian Martin Duberman about the late people's historian Howard Zinn. He is out with the first biography since Howard Zinn's death. It's called Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. And I know that we have many Howard Zinn fans listening. If you have any questions about Howard Zinn's life or you'd like to talk about how his work affected you, I'm sure many of you have read A People's History of the United States. We have had Howard on the show, luckily, and he was in Northern California many times talking about his work. And then, of course, there were the readings from A People's History of the United States. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Also, Howard's books about history, what did that tell you about history and how it's written? And what do you think about, I keep thinking about this, how this time will be written, say, 100 years from now? Who's going to tell these stories? And also, if you have any comments on the importance of really giving the people a voice when it comes to history, we'd love to hear from you. And speaking of voices, why don't we hear a clip from Howard Zinn? This is Howard speaking at a rally in Boston back in 2007.
This government does not speak for us. No. This government does not act for us. This government does not represent us.
Yeah.
Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats represent us. Congress does not represent us. The Supreme Court does not represent us. We are on our own, as we always have been, as people always have been throughout history. Governments have never represented the people anywhere. Governments have always represented privilege and power, and we are seeing the epitome of that now in Washington. And it has always been up to the people themselves when they wanted to secure peace and justice to work and act and struggle for it, and that's what we are doing today.
And that is Howard Zinn speaking at a rally in Boston in 2007. Howard Zinn died on January 27th, 2010.
He was quite elderly at that point.
Right.
I was a little surprised. I hadn't heard that recording. He sounded a little more strident than I usually associate with him. I mean, he was much more persuader than somebody who talked at you. But he must have been 83 or 4 when he made that speech.
He probably said, "Hey, I've got nothing to lose. I might as well get it out there.
I guess so.
And Martin, it's interesting because at times when he would give speeches at SNCC events or other events, he would talk like this, but not often. Sometimes he'd came out and would sort of say something that was, quote, a little more radical than what he would say at other events. Can you talk a little bit about that and just what did you gather from reading some of the transcripts of what he said at these various events over the years?
I would say that his political philosophy was quite consistent. That is, from adulthood on. But his style of presentation, which is why I was just startled. His style of presentation was generally. He was a very funny man, for one thing, very witty and clever, and he had a real genius in terms of winning over an audience. He would talk to them very informally, you know, as if gathered in a living room with people he knew well, and chatting away, he would sort of amiably bring them along to the conclusions that he had started with. I think that you had asked me earlier about Howard as a historian, and I think there his views changed through time more than they did in terms of his political philosophy. I guess the only thing I'd add in terms of the political philosophy is that though he was often accused of being a communist, and at the very least of being a socialist, all that Howard really believed in was not ideological. It was simply his belief that there could be less suffering in the world and that we had to find a way to achieve that.
And speaking of communism, the FBI and their files of Howard Zinn reported that he was a dues-paying member of the Communist Party and attended Communist Party meetings 5 times a week in Brooklyn, which he wasn't and didn't. And you report that Howard did not know it at the time, but early in 1949, the FBI opened a security index file on him. They managed to get a large number of facts wrong. They included the invention of a sister for Howard. You pored over these facts. What are these files? What did they reveal?
Well, I've grown used to reading FBI files. I did a biography of Paul Robeson, for example, where his FBI file was gigantic. And the FBI very often, you know, gets things wrong, like assigning a sister to Howard that he didn't have. But that should not make us feel in any way casual about the FBI's power through the years. Yes, agents on the spot could make mistakes, but the FBI ruined a lot of lives. Since there was no evidence of any kind, unlike with Robeson, that Howard was sympathetic to the Communist Party or to Soviet Russia, they did not ruin his life, but they did keep him under surveillance It was occasional surveillance. It wasn't a daily thing as it was with Robeson, where his phones were constantly tapped, and his activities were always monitored.
You say that perhaps the most bizarre episode contained in Howard Zinn's FBI file is an agent's detailed account of an attempt in the early 1950s to recruit him as a source of information to turn him into an informant.
Yes, they tried that twice. Needless to say, it did not work in either case.
But he did speak with them.
Oh, he spoke with them, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he probably enjoyed that in some ways.
Well, he was polite, apparently, from what you can deduce from the transcript. He was polite, but he was also not about to give them any information that could harm anybody else, or himself, for that matter.
Right. And so then after that happened, he... As you said, he worked at Spelman, a school for African-American women, a school that was very restrictive, wanted them to turn out to be sort of dainty women, very
right.
polite. They had to turn in early, and after the dance, they could only stay out for 15 minutes. And it's so interesting to read about how the girls really took to Howard and really confided in him and was hoping that he could at least change the constraining nature of the school to give them at least some room to breathe. Can
right.
you talk a little bit about the relationship between the young women and Howard?
Yes. Among Howard's many students were a few who became very famous. One is Marion Wright Edelman, head of the Children's Fund, and another is Alice Walker, the writer. Both of those two women adored Howard, but almost all of his students adored him. He had some conservative students in class. But I went through what must have been hundreds of letters from students to Howard in the years after he had taught them. And uniformly, they describe him as, the most important influence in their lives. I think what they sensed from Howard from the very beginning, it's important to remember this was a white man
right.
teaching black women. There were some other white members of the Spelman faculty. But what they sensed from Howard, as I see it from the very beginning, was that he genuinely cared about them.
And
he cared about the struggle that most of them were not yet involved with. But in part thanks to Howard, a significant number of the undergraduates at Spelman did become involved in the civil rights struggle and ended up in jail.
And it was also such a different life for Howard and his family because they moved from Brooklyn to Atlanta. And in 1956, it was, as you write, segregated, including mm-hmm. public transportation, water fountains, theaters, and libraries.
Yes, and both Howard and his wife, Roz, who should certainly not be forgotten in all of this, since she played her own activist role, they were both very active in trying to desegregate public facilities in Atlanta.
And Martin, we're going to take a quick break, and we will definitely talk more about Roz, Howard's wife, after we come back. We're speaking with award-winning historian Martin Duberman about his new biography, The First, Since Howard Zinn's Death, Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
And you are listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco, where we are in the last hours of our fall membership campaign. At last report, less than $15,000 to go to our goal, hence 15 step from Radiohead behind us. I'm Matt Martin, here with Rose Aguilar, asking for your support. Your Call listeners, now is the time for you to show up, help us push toward this goal, and we will be happy to send you Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left, for a $120 contribution.
At 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. We have had such an incredible morning.
Amazing.
Thank you so much for supporting independent local radio. And I know we've got a lot of history fans out there. If you appreciate history as much as we do, support a station that loves doing shows about history. 800-525-9917. $120. We will send you Martin Duberman's new biography of Howard Zinn. You can also go online, kalw.org.
800-525-9917. And we do have a challenge. On this last day, we've got the biggest challenges of the drive. Today, we have $1,000 on the line from Ann Smolka and Robert Blackburn in Berkeley, as well as another listener in San Francisco. They put forward $1,000 and said if 25 Your Call listeners will support this station during this hour, they will give an additional $1,000 to local public radio. We are pushing toward the goal. You can make it happen. 800-525-9917.
And we are almost there. Thank you so much. 800-525-9917. No interruption pledge drive. We won't be back on the air until May. We can do this. KALW.org. If we can get 25 calls or clicks, we will get an extra $1,000. Thank you so much. 800-525-9917. I read this biography. I loved it. Lots of history, lots of new information about Howard Zinn's life. $120. We'll get you the book. 800-525-9917.
Howard Zinn, one of those independent voices that people listen to that transform the way people think about history. Your support at 800-525-9917. We'll keep independent voices on the air here at KALW. 800-525-9917. Let's light up the lines to support this kind of in-depth conversation that we're having with Martin Duberman and that you hear every day of the week here on KALW. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. Of course, any amount counts. 25 calls or clicks and we'll get an extra $1,000. Thank you so much. If you can't afford $120 or maybe even more, 800-525-9917, kalw.org. 800-525-9917. And thanks for your support. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and today we are speaking with award-winning historian Martin Duberman about his new biography of Howard Zinn. It's the first and only Howard Zinn biography since he died on January 27th, 2010. It's called Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. Howard Zinn, historian, educator, activist, most famous for his incredible book, A People's History of the United States. And I know we have a lot of Howard Zinn fans out there. If you read his incredible book, what did that book really mean to you? The first time I read it, I was just really happy that he started off with Native Americans, because Native Americans are hardly talked about in this country, and Howard started the book giving us information about Columbus's diaries. Not very nice words, but really important words to read. So if you have any stories about how Howard's work touched you, how he shaped your vision of history, we'd love to hear from you. 800-866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment at yourcallradio.org. And Martin, you brought up Roz, Howard's wife, before the break, and I'm glad you did. Talk a little bit about her. And again, just to remind everyone, in the last years of Howard's life, he destroyed nearly everything in his own archives that might have revealed his feelings and his relationships. If there was to be any biography, Howard obviously wanted it to be about political, not private matters. But tell us, what did you learn about Roz?
I learned that Roz was somewhat less social. I'd say a good deal less social than Howard. Howard loved people, and he loved being among them. And he could stay at a party indefinitely. But Roz was a more private person, a more interior. She was also a painter. It was, I would say, without question, a love marriage. And they married when they were quite young, in their early 20s. But it was not an untroubled marriage. I guess almost no marriages are. But, Howard, how to put this? Howard did have affairs periodically, and at one point, Russ found out, and that led to a quite serious breach. And it didn't look for a bit as if they were going to be able to patch it up, but they did. And the marriage continued until the death of both of them. It was a very companionable marriage in which they shared values, especially political values. And Roz took part in a fair amount of Howard's political work, I would say especially in regard to the black struggle. And I've seen a lot of her paintings. She was a decidedly gifted artist, and I felt a little badly for her because in a way... you know, trained to be a traditional woman. In those years, that's the only kind of socialization that was available, really. She was, you know, the traditional helpmate. She smoothed the way for Howard so that he didn't have to worry about, you know, household chores and cooking and so forth.
Right.
And raising the children much. But he did dearly love Roz, and in her last years when she was ill, he was, you know, stunningly good to her. He just canceled everything and did everything, including the cooking and cleaning the house.
Well, and that definitely comes across in your book, although subtle, because Howard did travel from the north to the south on a regular basis to support people doing sit-ins, to in many cases report from what was happening on the Freedom Rides. And I often wondered, because they have two children, I often sort of assumed, well, I guess Roz must be taking care of the kids because Howard's doing so much, you know, moving back and forth on a regular basis.
When Howard went out to give a talk or a series of talks around the country, I think Roz did not accompany him. If he gave a talk overseas, she would often go because they would make a vacation out of it. But she very much was a stay-at-home mother. And neither of their grown children have any particular complaints about how they were parented.
We're speaking with award-winning historian Martin Duberman about the first biography since Howard Zinn's death, January 27th, 2010. It's called Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any memories of Howard Zinn, if you want to talk about how his work affected you, specifically A People's History of the United States, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment, yourcallradio.org, or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Martin, we're getting a lot of emails from, or a few emails from listeners who say you sound exactly like Howard Zinn.
Oh, how nice. Well, that's a tremendous compliment. Thank you.
Well, let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I had him in school as a you know, please excuse my speech. I have a stutter.
Oh, that's okay.
So if I'm having a hard time, it's not the problem with a phone or anything like that. So we would go to his classes if we were enrolled in his classes or not. And folks would sit on the floor, and it was packed hall, and his classes were an event at the BU.
And Boston University, yes.
Yes,
he taught there after
Spelman. And I had him twice in the class, and I didn't agree with him, okay? But he was, for sure, a socialist. However, he was not a part of any kind of party. He did not agree with how it was being done all across the world. He was a true, but he truly had that view, and that was the first thing he said in his first day of classes, you know. And so I was opposed to it and everything, and then I started working in the real world. And wow, I was like, oh, I guess Mr. Zinn was correct about various things, you know. Like, you know, working a plastics plant, and I started like trying to get everybody organized, you know, transform into this, this right wing guy. It was like the markets, you know. And then I was like, you know what we really need to do is organize, you know. We should get paid more money, you know. But it was so funny. And like, he had such a huge, you know, effect on so many people. And I would say, for those, like, you know, the top thing was he was so nice. Okay, he was so nice.
Yes.
Those who opposed him, his classes were packed for that reason, because you could stand up and you could read out whatever you wanted to say, have your say. And he was like, okay, I don't agree with you, but I respect your view. And that's the top thing that he taught all of the students who, you know, were in his classes, which you couldn't really count. I mean, it was so many, and there was, you know, the rooms are packed. And he said, okay, I'm allowed this amount of students, but this is how I sign my name. And he put his name on the blackboard, okay, as just a Z-I-N-N. And he did it in block letters. He goes, you know, if one were to forge my signature, nobody would be the wiser. So both times I had to forge to add him to the classes always book. And the school was like, you don't get any help, you know. Like, the guy had, like, you know, just all, you know, and he's like, I don't need any help because there'll be no tests. I just, you know, but you have to write this huge thing at the end of the year. I was late both times and I had to feed with him. Like, oh, I'm not finished with my 40-page paper, you know. He's like, all right, well, you got to have it in by this day. And I did, you know.
Well, I think you've hit on something important about him, as certainly as a teacher. Though Howard had very strong views, he was not an authoritarian in the classroom. Most professors, you know, lecture as if they're delivering the truth to the masses, and the job of students is to write it down and then parrot it back in an exam. Howard wasn't that way at all. He was interested in dialogue, in drawing out students, and as the caller said, especially students who disagreed with his own point of view. I would only take issue with your insistence that Howard was a socialist, because he did go back and forth, and he was certainly not a Marxist. I mean, what it always comes down to is how you're defining socialism. And as I tried to say earlier, what Howard cared about was the socialist end, that is, less suffering for as many people as possible. He did not care about the means. He was not interested, for example, in socializing the means of production and distribution, which was a classic goal of Marxism. But anyway, we can disagree about that, as Howard might have said.
Well, thank you for calling, John. I love your story about how you had a view during college and then how your view changed when you got into what you call the real world. That's a great story. Thank you for calling. We had Christina on the line. She couldn't stay with us, but she said, Howard Zinn helped me maintain my optimism about the world. No one else could do that. And we have an email from Sue who says, I agree, Martin does sound like Howard. Howard Zinn has been my lifelong hero. I was 17 when I first read his People's History of the United States, and it blew up the world for me and broadened and deepened my instinctive view of the real history of our country's trajectory through time. I've read all his books, and his writing and activism changed my life and probably helped create the activist in me. I was incredibly fortunate to have met and spent time with him the year before his death, and it was the greatest day of my life. He was as kind as he was wise and committed to creating a better world. I can't wait to read your book, Martin.
Oh, well, that's so nice. And I like the fact that she pointed out, as I had failed to, how kind Howard was. He was a very generous spirit, and he really did care about people.
Well, thank you for the email, Sue, and thank you for calling in, Christina. Let's hear next from John in Palo Alto. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hello. When I read Howard Zinn's book, you mentioned the founding of America by Columbus, and he started talking about the Native Indians. But he gave an impression that the Native Indians were pretty much living in peace, that the Carib Indians were just savaged by the Europeans when they arrived. But he doesn't mention at all the fact that the Carib Indians had wiped out the previous group that was living on the islands, and that if anyone cares to have a better history of the Carib Indians, they should go to Wikipedia and look at the first few paragraphs of the history of the Carib Indians, where it says that they exterminated by warfare and other means whole tribes of people in order to inhabit the islands that they were on when Columbus arrived. So it wasn't an idyllic paradise that Columbus had arrived at. They had slavery. They had every conceivable form of human evil. And you don't get that when you read Howard Zinn. You come away feeling that Columbus introduced all of these horrible things to the islands, when in actuality, according to the historians, and people can check this out for themselves, through carbon dating and whatnot, there were huge killings, mass murders, etc. So
thank you for calling. What are your thoughts on that, Martin?
What Howard was responding to was the view that was then current. People's History was published in 1980. That Christopher Columbus, you know, was a brave and noble man.
Right.
And his diaries make very clear that he was hardly that. On the other hand, your reader makes, you know, a real and necessary point. It isn't as if a people's history is perfectly accurate in terms of every detail. But to say that is simply to say that no work of history is. Historians themselves love to the self-image of people who are objective and above common error and are only interested in telling the truth. Howard had as deep a respect for the evidence, and he said this over and over again, that every historian cannot move beyond what the evidence will allow. But his overriding concern was putting into the history books all the stories that had previously been left out of them, namely the stories of ordinary people and working-class people who had stood up for their own rights and succeeded in reducing, not always succeeded, but sometimes succeeded in reducing the amount of misery that they were subjected to. But, yes, of course, you can pick this section or that section. I've done the same in my biography. I selected out two examples in which I felt that Howard, had overdone it, or had misstated the evidence. One was in terms of the motives of the Founding Fathers, and the other was his portrait of Abraham Lincoln. And I'm pretty tough on him in the biography. Nonetheless, I admire his overall intent, because previous to Howard, with the exception of a rare historian like Charles and Mary Beard, previously, the standard high school textbook glorified militarism. It glorified the industrial magnates who produced their wealth off of the sweat of millions, to whom they gave nothing, not even Social Security. I think it's important to keep in mind there was a study done. It's very strange coincidence. Just before Howard's book came out in 1979, there was a study done, a very reputable one, of high school textbooks, and it showed precisely that that ordinary people were almost never mentioned. The textbooks were essentially glorifications of the powerful and the dark side of the lives of the powerful was almost never referred to. And it's thanks to a people's history that those high school textbooks and college textbooks today are very different from what they were, say, 30 years ago.
We've got about 4 minutes left with award-winning historian Martin Duberman out with the first biography of Howard Zinn since his death on January 27th, 2010. And you can give us a call if you have any final thoughts or comments about Howard Zinn's life, if you have any questions for Martin about what he found during his research, 866-798-8255. And I also wanted to ask you, Martin, just quickly about Howard Zinn. He really didn't embrace feminism or the gay and lesbian movement. He omitted them from the original text of his seminal work, A People's History. Can you talk a little bit about this? What did you learn about his views on feminism and gay rights?
Yes, as somebody who considers himself a feminist and is a gay man, I knew that about Howard, but we have to keep in mind, that everybody is a project, is a product of his or her generation, and in each generation, certain issues are the central issues. When Howard was growing up, the central issues were race and class. Not feminism, not gay rights. After those issues did come to the fore, Howard had some trouble bending his mind around them. But in the later editions of A People's History, he does speak well of both the feminist and the gay movements, though he doesn't go on at great length about either one of them. But, everyone is a product of their times.
Right.
And if we would all do with the issues of our own time what Howard did in his time, the world would be far better off.
Well, and also, Martin, I just wanted to ask you, you do not hear many people speak, or people who, when you heard that clip of Howard Zinn, people like Howard do not have a voice, really, in our national dialogue, right? You would definitely use the word radical, even though he was basically talking about making sure people were fed and had a living wage and were able to afford housing and maybe send their children to school. That's sort of considered radical these days. As you were reading over his works, how do you kind of, compare sort of what he did back then and what we dealt with back then compared to what we're doing today and the dialogue that we hear today in today's discourse?
If Howard was still alive, I think he would be appalled, and he would be especially appalled at Mitt Romney, who simply, you know, dismisses a few days ago the right of 47% of these moochers to have the very things you listed, you know, decent food, decent education, housing, jobs, et cetera. That's what Howard meant by socialism, that everybody had a decent life. I heard a report just last night that I forget the group, they've come out with the names of the 100 richest people in the country at the moment. Those 100 richest people own 1/8 of all the assets in the United States. Now,
well, I'm sure that if Howard were still with us, he would have choice words to say about that.
Indeed.
So, Martin, thank you so much for keeping the spirit of Howard Zinn alive. Martin Duberman, author of Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.
And you're listening to Your Call on KALW. I'm Matt Martin, general manager of the station, joining Rose here after listening to this great conversation with Martin Duberman about Howard Zinn, the kind of conversation your support for KALW makes possible. And we're asking for that support right now in the final hours of our fall membership campaign. Rose, we are now less than $8,000
wow.
from the goal. Your support at 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917 can put us there.
Wow, thank you so much. 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. And we had a 25-call-click match this
That's
hour.
Right.
How are
we doing?
We've
had 18 calls and clicks in this hour.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank Carla. She says, how I miss Howard Zinn's voice, but I am so glad we have all the wonderful voices from KALW. I wish I could give you as much as you give me. Believe me, you have given us as much as we give you. Thank you so much. You can join Carla and so many others at 800-525-9917. $120 contribution to KALW. We will send you Martin Duberman's new book, Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left. You can also pledge online at kalw.org.
800-525-9917, kalw.org. Let's wrap this drive up and say that great programming, uninterrupted, supported by people in the San Francisco Bay Area, can grow, can thrive, can do more. Your support makes it happen. 800-525-9917. Thanks to Joe Camaro in Daly City, a new member who says, I believe in what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Joe, thank you. We're doing it together, and your support makes a great difference to us.
Thank you so much. Less than $8,000 to go. This has been an incredible drive. 800-525-9917. Support no interruption pledge drives, and we won't be back on the air until May. We can do this. 800-525-9917. You can also go online to kalw.org.
We have Martin Duberman's book, Howard Zinn, A Life on the Left, the first biography of the great radical historian, yours for a $120 contribution. Lots of other thank you gifts, but as you know, we don't spend a lot of time talking about them because we want to focus on the programming, and we think it makes the argument for itself why you want to be part of this station. If you've never given before, now's a great time. Help us go over the top with this challenge in this hour and through our goal. We want to smash through this, and when we hit it, we will wrap this drive up. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. I see one line open. This is the last day for your call
That's
during
right.
the pledge drive. I also really want to thank Ali Bundner and Malihe Razazan, our incredible producers who've brought on these great guests the last 2 weeks. This is a collective effort. We do it as a team. Support that kind of radio. 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. $120 will send you Martin Duberman's new book about Howard Zinn. Of course, any amount helps us reach our goal. 25 calls or clicks will get an extra $1,000. We've got less than $8,000 to go. This has been amazing. 800-525-9917.
You can also go to kalw.org. That's what Monica Corman did. She lives in Menlo Park. She says, KALW has programs I'd never hear anywhere else, like Your Call, Jim Hightower, Philosophy Talk, Alternative Radio, My Music, among others. I also like the Bay Area character of the programs. Your support keeps us connected to this community. Sure, we have global and national voices, programs that are just really great, so we put them on the air. But we also believe in making radio right here in San Francisco. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. We are almost there. KALW.org. 800-525-9917. Thank you for your support.
KALW, San Francisco.